Join us now for the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University in Greenville, South Carolina. Our speaker today is Dr. Ray St. John, Chairman of the Division of English Language and Literature at BJU. The title of his message is A Psalm for Troubled Times. The text is from Psalm 139.
We all have them. We'd like to avoid them, but they come anyway. We suspect that God is responsible for many of them. They tend to drive us toward the Lord. I'm talking, of course, about troubles. In Job, we find Eliphaz saying, "Yet man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upward." My title this morning is A Psalm for Troubled Times. Let's turn, please, to Psalm 139. Psalm 139. It's a psalm of David, who knew all about the heights and depths that are part of human existence. And, of course, he's not alone. Recently, I was reading about Margaret Laird, a missionary in Africa. It was 1931. She and her husband were in their second term. The problem they faced was that Margaret was wondering where the next meal was going to come from. Well, not for herself, but for her new baby boy. He needed special meals, but what he really needed was virtually impossible to obtain, especially in Africa in the 1930s. She said they weren't ready for this baby, but going back to Africa, she had taken some special food. In her case, she wanted some oatmeal and prunes. She felt that that was part of the necessary diet because of the limitations from what they had available. She had had all of this taken care of. She had provided it as they had come back from the United States to Africa. A friend of hers, however, from another mission station there, had come, and Margaret had helped to deliver that baby. And that baby had needed oatmeal and prune juice as part of its daily sustenance. And the result was that when Margaret's baby came, the oatmeal and the prune juice were all gone. She had lost her first baby, she said, largely because she felt that it had not had the right nutrition. She had had to give it orange juice from oranges that were not yet ripe. She had very good reasons for wanting what she wanted. And now here she found herself with a new baby in the midst of Africa and no possible way of obtaining what she needed. The missionary woman whose child she had helped deliver and for whom she had given her own supply of this food came by. She was on her way to the capital of their country and offered to pick up some goods for the Laird family. As Margaret gave her the list of shopping goods, this woman took a look at the list and said rather reprovingly, "Well, this is certainly silly." Poor Margaret was taken back by her response. She said, "You knew you were going to have a baby. You should have ordered these things from America. You know good and well I'll never find them here in Africa." Margaret couldn't believe her ears. She had returned from America well prepared, but then she had given out of the kindness of her heart that which she had for her baby to this other woman who had had her child. Understandably, she was quite upset by the insensitivity of the woman, so much so that she couldn't speak. The woman was right about one thing, and that is that the oatmeal, the prunes that she needed, she felt, for her baby were not going to be available. Margaret went to her room, fell on her knees, pouring out her heart to the Lord. She said something like this, "Lord, you know all about it. If it's presumptuous, then show me and forgive me. But you are able to provide for my children in the heart of Africa, and you know I had no money to order these things. You know I have never asked anybody to send me anything. If you're able to provide, please provide the things my children need." What assurance did she have that God was knowledgeable about her situation, that he was concerned about her need? When things are going badly for you, where do you turn? You have a special passage for the dark days of life? I was startled to come out of the alumni building to find that the sun was shining after the overcast day. We sometimes look at our lives, and I was recently enumerating some things that have been going on for my wife and me. It had been rain and rain and rain, and I had a marriage ceremony, and we had rehearsal, and it had gone very badly. You know, you young ladies, as you plan ahead, sometimes good to think a bad rehearsal, good wedding. Obviously, good wedding, you hope for a good marriage. But anyway, things had gone very badly, and it was just everything was piling up and piling up and piling up. You may have days like that or weeks like that, maybe even summer sessions like that. But nonetheless, what do you do when you are conscious of the fact that you need help? David has an answer for us, I believe, in this psalm. Now, I don't know if you've chosen a psalm for yourself or you've chosen another passage where you go to. A man in my church has recently experienced a very serious downturn. He's a very active man. We tease him about being one of the good old boys, and he's certainly that, but he came to know the Lord and has an active, growing spiritual relationship with the Lord. He had been out cutting some trees that had fallen down because of all the rain that we've had lately. And in the action of reaching up with his chainsaw, apparently something happened and his appendix burst. The doctors misdiagnosed that for 3 days, telling him he simply had stomach flu or perhaps he'd had food poisoning. And the result was he nearly died. I was talking to him by phone, and he was sharing with me how Psalm 37 was such a comfort to him. I had shared that with him on many occasions in the difficult times of his life. There's a special promise embedded in that psalm, how that if we give our way unto the Lord, that He does give us the desires of our heart. And I don't know if you have a passage like that. Some people turn to Psalm 23, which is a very common psalm at funerals. But it's a psalm of special blessing, God's concern about us. David knew the difficulties and the blessings. And in this psalm, we find some revelation of God's relationship to us that I think is especially comforting. Let's read the first few verses of Psalm 139. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down-sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from Thy Spirit, or whither shall I flee from Thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, Thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, Thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall Thy hand lead me, and Thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from Thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to Thee. We don't have time this morning to look at the entire psalm, but I think these opening verses will help us see something about God's relationship to us. One writer has called this psalm the psalm for people at their wits' end. I used to work for the state of Michigan and the Department of Agriculture, and I still remember seeing a sign as I was driving along a resort area. There was the sign outside a cottage that said, wits' end. Apparently, a family that had grown very tired of urban life, had purchased some property and used that property to build a cabin and there to have a retreat from the difficulties of life. Dr. Bob Sr. said that when you get to the end of your rope, you need to learn to tie a knot and hold on. Now, when you come to the end of yourself, when you are experiencing the difficulties that are indigenous to life, that every one of us has, this psalm has a message for us. Let's notice what David tells us. Back to verse 1. O Lord, Thou hast searched me. Now, I don't want to give you a special lesson in pronouns, but I think every one of you can handle this one. Me, singular. It's not that God has searched us. He has searched me. And that's true for every one of us. We have now, if I remember math accurately, we have, what, over 7 billion people in this world? God knows every one of them intimately. Recently, I watched my first class come in, and I was thinking there are only 6 students in the class, and I was just sitting there reflecting about how little I really knew about each of those students. You think about your neighbor here in chapel, how little you know about the person sitting beside you. But you realize that God has searched you and known you. Now, David stipulates this. Notice in verse 2, "Thou knowest my down sitting and mine uprising." Now, these are the trivial actions of life. I don't know how many times you've arisen today and sat down, how many times you've moved about, but here is God who knows every movement that you have made. "Not only that, thou understandest my thought afar off." You ever had the experience of not understanding your own thoughts? Those of us who grade papers are sometimes aware of that, I suspect. But you know, when we don't understand ourselves, God still understands us. From afar off, from His place in heaven, He understands our thoughts. Implicit here, I think, is the idea that He understands our motives as well. He understands us when we don't understand ourselves. Now, young ladies, you may be hoping for a time when you find a man who is going to understand you. But you'll learn that even in marriage, that man, even though he may try, he still won't understand all of your thoughts. You'll constantly be a mystery to him. Maybe that's one of the joys of marriage, the mystery that is part of that relationship. But God, there's no mystery. He understands your thoughts. He knows them intimately. And then you'll notice in verse 3, "Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. In fact, for there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether." Have you ever been surprised by a word that's come from somebody else that you thought you knew well? A close friend, maybe a parent, maybe a brother or sister, someone you worked with. A word that seemed to come from some mysterious depth that you had no idea was there, and you were startled by what that person said. But for God, He is never startled. For Him, there is no awareness of newness. There is no mystery to what we said. There is no, "Repeat that, I didn't understand that." He knows every thought as well as every word. Verse 5 reminds us that there is a presence of God everywhere around us. It's not only the knowledge, and you understand, the theologian would tell us that this is stressing God's omniscience. He knows everything there is to know about us, but moreover, He knows everything there is to know about everything. "Thou hast beset me behind and before." He's behind you. He's in front of you. You understand that's a metaphor for being all around you. In warfare, you wanted to make sure that the person protecting your back was alert. The person in front of you, you wanted to be sure was alert as well. You wanted to make sure that you had people that were vigilant on each side of you. David, who had a warrior background, understood this well. "Thou hast beset me," he says, "behind and before." Not only that, He has laid His hand upon us. I can't help thinking here of a picture. Here is God on either side, God before and behind, and God above with a protection there as well as around. David can't help in verse 6 moving to an exclamation here. "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it." When we come to realize that this God, the Creator of the universe, the One who has always been and always will be, not only knows us in the most intimate way, but He is also there as protection and also for direction with us. No wonder David breaks into such words of praise. "It's too wonderful. I can't even understand that." And then verse 7, David begins a series of images for us that reminds us of how present God is. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? Some commentators come to this psalm, and their special emphasis is upon the judgment nature. The fact that God is knowledgeable of everything that we have done. He is conscious of that. He is storing it all up. And the emphasis is largely negative there upon what God knows. I can't help thinking that the other side of that, the wonderful sense of knowledge of and protection for that is provided in this psalm as it describes God's relationship to us, is so positive and encouraging for us. The heading in my Bible says that David praises God for his all-seeing providence. A lot of wisdom. And that's the approach I'm taking this morning. Whither shall I go? Whither shall I flee? You know the answer. This is a rhetorical question. The answer is nowhere. Verse 8, if I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. The Jews were not great flyers. Now, they were also not great swimmers. Apparently, and we find that David is going to take two areas here in this psalm and stress them because the experience was so foreign and so difficult and I suspect so frightening that what he's communicating here is the fact that when we are in the most difficult of places, God is still there. If I go up into the heavens, up into the air, thou art there. Obviously, God is in the heaven itself. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. This hell is probably referring to the grave, the very lowest, darkest place where man could be. God is there. If I take the wings of the morning. This is kind of an interesting little phrase. I don't know if you've ever been up early enough in the morning to see the sunrise. I have a video I sometimes show at my church. It was the speech. It's one of these talking heads, but the man is so good. He happens to be a graduate of the university. He is so good that he really just lays out his experience in New Guinea as a missionary in a way you never forget it. But he has a reference in this to his wife. He wants to try to get his wife to get up. She's a nurse there, and they're carrying out their ministry. And she says, wait a minute. If God had wanted me to see a sunrise, she was a night person, not a morning person. She said he would have scheduled it later in the day. Now, for the Jews and for us, you get up in the morning, the sun just peaks above the horizon and you see those first rays of light. Here are the wings of the morning. You know that light travels at the rate of 186,000 miles per second. Incomprehensibly fast. David here is drawn to the Lord. He didn't know that figure, I suspect, but nonetheless, he was aware that God was in control. If he could travel at the speed of a light, if I take the wings of the morning or dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, we know as scientists have explored the oceans that there are rifts there, miles and miles of water, the very deepest parts. If I go with the speed of light, if I go in the impossible depth, notice verse 10, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. As you know, in Scripture, the right hand is a personification of God's power. It's also a reference to his favor. Even there, with the speed of light, in the greatest depths, God is still there. If I say, verse 11, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. It's oftentimes in the darkness that we are most fearful. I was reading recently about a father who was facing this with one of his children. This girl was frightened of the dark. And every night as he would go into her bedroom, he would there talk to her about God's presence, pray with her there, trying to help her understand that in the darkness we know of light, God is still there. There are times in our own personal darknesses when we fear God has abandoned us. But David is reminding us God is there, whether it's the physical darkness that we are in or the emotional darkness. God is still present. This morning before 7 o'clock, I received a call from a friend of mine who said his brother had just died of a heart attack. He was going to be leaving, going to see the family, a number of unsaved people. the darkness has descended upon the family. He was asking us to pray for God's light in the darkened lives of his unsaved relatives. In the midst of that kind of darkness, God's light shines through. Sometimes you may have been in a room closed off from all sources of light. That darkness is almost palpable to you there. One of my sons-in-law has taken his youth group down into the dark caverns. And as he's taken the group down there, one of the activities is for the guide to turn off all the lights. And there in the midst of that, he says that darkness is so heavy and so oppressive, you can almost feel the darkness. And he says he has to counsel the kids before the guide does that about what's going to happen, because their most instinctive response is fear in the darkness. David is reminding us that in the midst of the darknesses of life, God is still there. You know, sometimes in those darknesses, we lose all our orientation. We lose the ability to know where we're going, and we lose the ability to know who else is there. David reminds us that God is present and he knows. I need to return for a moment, though, to the story that I had begun with today. Margaret Laird was on her knees. She was praying, asking God to provide for her at that time. Her husband knocked on the door, said, "Margaret, I want you to come out." In fact, he had to do that twice before she came to the door. And there he introduced her to two men. They had come from a Portuguese mining camp far to the north. They had driven the long distance down to talk with Margaret's husband. And the reason was that a young Belgian miner had recently died of sunstroke. His very last request was that he might be buried at their mission station. He had recently come to know the Lord through material that he had read put out by that mission station where Margaret and her family lived. This was the reason that these two men were there, and the arrangements were made. The message delivered, these Portuguese men stood up to go to their car. She accompanied them out to the veranda. One of them turned to her and said rather nervously, "Mrs. Laird, I wonder if you would be insulted if I offered you something for the children." Her response was, "Well, not at all. I would think it was your graciousness and God's provision." He says, "Well, you may not know it, but we get all of our provisions from Belgium. We get two big wooden crates every month. I don't know what they think we are," he said, "but every month they send us tins of oatmeal, dried prunes, and cocoa that none of us can use. I happen to have mine with me. Would you accept them?" Margaret Laird was absolutely shocked. God had the answer on the way before she even made her request. For the rest of their time at that mission station, every month she would receive, like clockwork, 10 to 12 tins of oatmeal and dried prunes. And as a result, her baby grew strong and healthy through the unique provision that God had sent special delivery. God knew. God was around her, above her. God was providing. And in the midst of her own personal darkness, God was already supplying. But we must turn to the end of this psalm. Let's look at the last two verses. The psalm has begun with David's affirmation that God does this. Whether David wanted it or not, God did it. But notice what David does here at the end of the psalm. Verse 23, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." I'd like to think that David has learned something here from the opening where he has identified the fact of God's knowledge. He has now moved here at the close to the request to do exactly what God does. In other words, his own thinking was brought in alignment with God's thinking. Perhaps David has learned what we all need to learn, that the God who knows us intimately, who protects and guides us, is blessed by our invitation for him to do exactly what he says he'll do. The fact has been internalized by the poet and is now recognized as a need. Here's a wonderful step of spiritual maturity, one that every one of us needs to take. The hymn writer invites us to turn our eyes upon Jesus. Little do we realize the intensity with which He has turned His eyes upon us. Father, we pray that Thou mightst encourage us from Thy Word. We pray also, where needed, that Thou mightst rebuke us from Thy Word. Help us to live in such a way that we acknowledge Thy presence and Thy knowledge. And Lord, may we pray that Thou mightst search our hearts and try us. See whether there be any wicked way within us, and may we walk in the way.
You've been listening to the Chapel Hour, coming to you from the campus of Bob Jones University. Our speaker was Dr. Ray St. John, chairman of the Division of English Language and Literature at BJU. For a cassette copy of today's message, send a check for $5.13 to Campus Store, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina 29614. Be sure to mention the name of the speaker and today's date. The Chapel Hour has been sponsored by Bob Jones University.